Well, when I published the first paper in the American Journal of Medicine, taught doctors how to treat COVID-19. Now, it could have been somebody else. If Dr. Zelenko had the publication power, he could have done it. Or Dr. Proctor could have done it. Or Dr. Didier Riault could have done it. Or Brian Tyson or George Fried. It turned out that I was the person who had sufficient academic authority to do this. Okay? And I have authority. I take complete responsibility for doing this. I did it uniquely, the only person in the world to do this. Others actually may have been trying, and those papers may have been suppressed by editors. They probably were, because we found suppression of early treatment literature all over. It became impossible to publish papers. It was really hard. I may have just been the strongest and the most courageous doctor in the world to do that, but I did it. And the feedback I was getting was tremendous. It's like, of course, this makes sense. I'm so glad this got into the literature. It came out in electronic print in August, and then it came into hard print in January. When it hit January and it landed in all the medical libraries in the world, that's when things really heated up. And I do have to tell you that I got letters to the editor that came into the American Journal of Medicine, and Dr. Joe Alpert out of Arizona is the editor. Joe has let every one of those letters come to me for a response. The tenor of the letters is quite interesting. And they've come from Duke University. They've come from McGill, from Monash University in Australia. They've come from Brazil. The tenor of the letters is, Dr. McCullough, you can't do this. You can't treat COVID-19 patients. And it's the most interesting thing. My response is, doctor, please have courage. Let's do away with therapeutic nihilism. Let's join together and treat COVID-19 patients compassionately to reduce hospitalization and death. And we can do this, and I can do it. And we even have some more supportive data. So every time they say, oh, this drug doesn't work, and I'll say, well, here's five more studies that do. Hydroxychloroquine, we're up to hundreds of studies that shows that it works. Ivermectin, hundreds of studies. Steroids, dozens of studies. Anticoagulants, at least a dozen studies. We are so well supported in the concepts of treating COVID-19 that every time one of these letters comes in, I have a little fun with it because the position of strength is enormous. My thoughts and my positions and my statements over time are becoming progressively stronger and progressively more powerful. And the detractors sense that. The feeling of fear, intellectual fear from my adversaries is palpable. I feel it every day. And when that first paper came out in the American Journal of Medicine, my daughter said, Daddy, why don't you make a YouTube video? I said, I don't want to do social media. That's for kids. I don't have time for this. She taught me how to do it. It was PowerPoint. I literally just recorded my face down in the lower corner. I wore a tie, four slides, saying, listen, it's Americans, it's Italians. We looked at safety. We looked at efficacy. We looked at all the available data. We think this is the best way to put together the drugs. We had four slides on this. It got up on YouTube. It went absolutely viral. Went absolutely viral. And then I got a message. It said, you violated terms of the community, and it was struck down. Then I got a call from the U.S. Senate. So I told you I knew something was going on because I'd never been called by the White House before. I'd never been called by the Senate before. People in Washington were following this. They were stakeholders in Washington who, in a sense, knew that something is going wrong here, that this viral infection can be treated, but they were kind of waiting for someone in the academic community to step forward and literally say it can be treated. I was the first one to say, we can treat this. We can do this. It's very important to be able to make the statement, we can do it. Based on what? Based on my judgment. Based on my judgment, supported by the available science, but more importantly, based on my judgment. And so I ended up contracting COVID-19 myself. In October, my wife came home with it. She got sick. Before I knew it, got sick. It got into my lungs. I was in approved protocols. I quickly got into a protocol. It's hard, but I was able to find a protocol. I was on hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, a nutraceutical bundle per the protocol. I later on needed steroids because of lung involvement. But I wanted to show America that you could get COVID-19 and have some medical problems, which I do, and be able to get through it without being hospitalized. So on treatment day 6, illness day 8, beautiful sunny day in Dallas, Texas, I went out far away from anybody else and I went jogging. And I was really short of breath. I'll tell you, I'm a pretty strong runner. I was short of breath because of the COVID involvement in my lungs. But I ran all the way to a park. I made a video in the park. And then I made it all the way home. And I had fun with it. In fact, I played that Eminem music that said the recovery video. If any of you watch Eminem, and it said, I'm not afraid. And I just, you know, videoed myself. I said, I'm not afraid of COVID-19. And that video. That video was struck down and then ultimately had to get restored. Now, wait a minute. YouTube is playing a role here, in addition to all the other stakeholders, in suppressing any early treatment. In fact, the early treatment doctors started to become scrubbed from Twitter, from YouTube, from social media. And then ultimately, YouTube came out with a very clear message. They said, listen, we are only going to have information that is in line with the CDC, NIH, and FDA. Which say do nothing, and everything else is going to be considered misleading, and we're making the judgment. It's our call on what's misleading and what's not. But if it's pretty easy to be in line with the CDC, NIH, and FDA because they say to do nothing. So if the social media platform is to do nothing for early treatment and suppress early treatment, which it is, the major media is to suppress early treatment. So I still go back and say, who's responsible? I'd say the government agencies. In this period of crisis, if we're going to revert to our government agencies and our task force, and if our presidents can't be wise enough to even choose doctors who have ever even seen a patient and know how to treat it, if they're not wise enough to pick doctors who can treat COVID-19, we'll never have agencies that say we can treat COVID-19. And if we don't have agencies to do that, then nothing else is going to follow. If the doctors and people we pick have never seen COVID-19, they're scared of it, they don't know how to treat it, and the only thing they can comment on is wearing masks and social distancing and vaccination, that's all that America is going to have. So America's response to COVID-19, the official response, has basically been to well people, wear masks and be vaccinated, and America has offered nothing to the sick person. When they get in the hospital, we haven't seen much feature on that. The drugs are pretty weak. Remdesivir, convalescent plasma, tocilizumab, steroids, anticoagulants. You don't hear much about it, and it's honestly too late. Recently, a Harvard group, the Stop COVID group, had published those sick enough to get in the ICU. The 28-day mortality is 38%. Unacceptably high. Going into the hospital is a nightmare. I get desperate calls from all over the United States. Thank goodness for the major telemedicine and regional telemedicine networks that basically have taken over. They're the real heroes of the COVID-19 pandemic. Hospitals are empty now. Hospitals here in Dallas used to have 200, 300 patients at a time. Now they've got 10, 5. The other day in Texas, we hit zero deaths. Zero. So early treatment is going to be one of the great, great stories that historians, and they'll reach out to Ben Marble, who started MyFreeDoctor.com. Ben Marble, that whole telemedicine is run strictly by charity. People donate money, and they get patients their drugs, and they prescribe hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, steroids, and other drugs, and put them into combination. They follow protocols. Terrific. They're seeing thousands of patients by telemedicine every day. So Americans are getting treated. And so the word is out. People talk to each other. Americans, it's interesting. They understand that the media and our agencies are not leveling with them. They understand that. I did a seminar early on because I had treated a very prominent African-American minister here in Dallas. And him and his wife were sick. He didn't tell me about his wife, and she was testing negative. She wasn't a patient of mine. He got what's called sequence multi-drug therapy. He got really sick. He's got heart failure, diabetes, emphysema, obesity, kidney disease. Survives at home, sick for about 10 days. I'm not saying the drug therapy is perfect, but I saved him from being hospitalized or dying. His wife, no treatment, hospitalized, diagnosed late, was in the hospital for 5 weeks, came home on oxygen. That virus ravaged her lungs. It was awful. They had the same illness. And so he became activated. He said, Dr. McCullough, can you do a webinar for African-American churches nationwide? I did a webinar, and I presented my approach. And you know what the comments were? They said, Dr. McCullough, we knew the government was lying to us. We knew this was treatable. We knew it all along. People know this. It's the individual finance way. There are practices that have come on. I've gotten calls in Dallas, Dr. McCullough, can you share your protocols? We want to do this. The treating doctors really have interdigitated, and we informally formed a group called C19, where we get about 4 to 5 email updates a day of really critical updates on treatment. It is international. We have former heads of state involved in C19. We have Nobel Prize winners involved in C19, hundreds and hundreds of American doctors. There now is a published list of treating doctors in the United States, 250 across all 50 states. Texas has 35 of them. So Americans are finding their way despite suppression of early treatment. It's one of the great stories. And I'll never forget when I testified in the Texas Senate on March 10th, myself and Dr. Richard Urso, another leading early treating doctor in Houston, the chairwoman of the committee at one of the side conversations said, yeah, my husband got COVID-19 and he got really sick and I'm so glad he got early treatment. We found a doctor that was willing to prescribe ivermectin and other drugs. And I didn't throw out the zinger in front of the Texas media, but I felt like saying, you know, do you have to be a chairperson of the Department of Health and Human Services to get some treatment? What about these poor people in South Dallas and San Antonio and Houston? What about people who are not so privileged? Do you know 85% of some of our patients hospitalized here are Black or Hispanic? Who's helping them out? We should be having early treatment centers. They've been denied treatment. It's heartbreaking. Hispanics and African Americans have double the mortality of Caucasians. We have actually a law in America. It's called the 21st Century Cures Act. And what this says is that the FDA and doctors and others trying to decide on treatment evaluate the totality of information, including that little anecdote about your mom and the caretaker, as well as case series, large prospective cohort studies, retrospective cohort studies, hospital studies, outpatient studies, and then large prospective randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trials. But in a virus, single drugs themselves are very difficult to prove. Like if we required that for HIV, we'd have no treatment. HIV, we quickly realized we need 3 or 4 or 5 drugs. Everyone understands this. With COVID-19, I never thought a single drug was going to work. Hydroxychloroquine? No, not alone, but in combination. And it was that thinking. It takes kind of superior thinking that somehow doctors just lost their ability to think. Think a cancer doctor would say, oh, there's one pill that cures cancer? Never. It's always combination cancer therapy. So with this, with hydroxychloroquine, we're now at the stage, obviously, we have hundreds and hundreds of trials. We even have large randomized trials. I've published with Dr. Joe Ladapo, only prospective randomized controlled trials show benefit. So at every level, we meet the evidence grade to use hydroxychloroquine. At every level, we meet the evidence grade to use ivermectin. Not so much evidence, but good enough in the monoclonal antibodies. We have the same for steroids. The biggest and best trial in all of COVID-19 is cold corona. I mentioned it with colchicine. Shockingly, cold corona, the best trial, 4,000 patients, double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trial, the best quality that exists, rejected by New England Journal of Medicine, rejected by JAMA, rejected by Lancet. There is a global suppression on any early treatment. I want the listeners to understand how global this is. If we were to go north into Canada, doctors are threatened that their licenses will be examined or taken away if they attempt to treat an outpatient with COVID-19. They are told this in Canada. Northern EU, the same is true. Dr. Didier Rialt, who is trying to innovate with hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin in France in period times, has been under degrees of threat of arrest or partial arrest or house arrest, okay? Almost as if we're back in the dark ages. In Australia, in April, they put on the books in Queensland, Australia, a doctor who tries to help a patient with hydroxychloroquine could be penalized up until the point of going into jail for 6 months for helping. In South Africa, they put some doctors in jail for trying to help patients with ivermectin. Listen, the powers that are out there that want to suppress early treatment and cause as much fear, suffering, hospitalization, and death are not by happenstance. These are powerful forces that have created such fear among doctors. People are fearful they're going to lose their careers, their livelihood, their medical license. People are afraid of going to jail in just helping their fellow man get through COVID-19. This is extraordinary. Historians should go look through the course of time. You know, the very first doctor who tried to help a polio patient survive polio with the iron lung machine, which became really a stable ICU device, was thrown off medical staff. Throw him off staff. I'd look very carefully at the work building upon other investigative reporters. So Dr. Peter Bregan has a book called COVID-19, The Global Predators, We Are the Prey. And it has a living document. He's already pre-released the manuscript. And he's releasing updates. Now he's older. And he's kind of worried the story won't get out at his age. But I believe he's up to 900 documents. The whole story is not put together, but it is substantial and shows the interconnections of the stakeholders involved. Dr. Nicholas Wade, who was featured on a recent Tucker Carlson as an investigative reporter, he has assembled quite a story. And then Whitney Webb, who's a young investigative reporter, has published some striking things. All three of these, and as well as many more, are linking two important concepts. The suppression of early treatment and even probably the soft attenuation of in-hospital treatment to make the problem worse than what it is. Many methods to make the case count look higher than what it is, make the mortality numbers look worse than what they are. Many methods to create the reaction out of proportion to the reality, so lockdowns, fears, economic suffering, what have you. All of these things making the pandemic way worse than what it is, okay, to have that occur. More fear, suffering, hospitalization, death, loneliness, lockdown, in order to promote mass vaccination. These two are tightly linked. Now, mass vaccination, at all costs, the world must be mass vaccinated. And human beings on Earth ought to understand at this point in time, what we're seeing is unprecedented. It became known the virus was going to be amenable to a vaccine somewhere around April, May. And at that point in time, therapy was suppressed. Everything, nothing could be published. Everything, the fake Lancet paper, squash treatment. And then prepare the population for vaccination. Once the vaccines come out, they're short-tracked. There's all kinds of enthusiasm regarding it, needles in all the arms, trucks rolling, Americans cheering, and then the mass vaccination program starts off. And then before we know it, we're vaccinating pregnant women. Why are we doing that? That can't be safe. Now we're going to vaccinate COVID recovery patients. Wait a minute. They have complete and robust permanent immunity. No one's ever challenged the immunity of a COVID recovery patient. Why are we vaccinating them? And then it keeps going and going. At first, we vaccinated high-risk people. I didn't really understand vaccinating young healthcare workers because they weren't at risk. There were never any hospital outbreaks in the United States. The only thing that was clear, nursing home workers gave it to nursing home patients. We knew that. So nursing home workers should have been vaccinated. And then maybe high-risk people, and we should call it a day. I always estimated maybe 20 million people need to be vaccinated. But that didn't seem to satisfy the vaccine stakeholders, which are Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, AstraZeneca, and any others that come forward, the CDC, the FDA, and the NIH, and the White House. Massive vaccine stakeholders. You could throw in Gates Foundation, World Health Organization. You could throw those in as well. Massive stakeholders, and they wanted everybody to be vaccinated without exception. No one will escape the needle. We've actually never had this before. And the vaccine process is extraordinary. There's a consent form. It says this is investigational. We don't know if it's going to work. There's only 2 months of data. The side effects could be a sore arm all the way to death. And we don't know. Sign here. We need your identifying information. We need a barcode on the vial. We need you identified, and now you're in a database. You're vaccinated. And so this mass vaccination is extraordinarily concerning. We never vaccinate into the middle of a pandemic, never. We've never had an effective vaccine for respiratory virus, including influenza. It's only modestly effective. We knew from the published data that the attack rates in placebo and the vaccine arms were less than 1%. So we know that the vaccine can have a less than 1% effect in the population. Why would it be any different than the clinical trials? We knew from the clinical trials that it didn't stop COVID-19, so people can get COVID-19 anyway. Why would be this incredible drive to vaccinate everybody? And now, oh my lord, now the vaccine within a few months has been completely weaponized. Now travel is related to the vaccine. People can't go to school without the vaccine. People are losing their jobs without the vaccine. Believe me, there is something very, very potent in this vaccine. It should be disturbing to everybody. The word vaccine ought to be the most disturbing word that they have seen. Now we have 12-year-old children who are told they can decide on their own whether or not they could take a vaccine. So, you know, about 70% of my patients are vaccinated. I'm very pro-vaccine. I've taken all the vaccines myself, about 70%, and they were all vaccinated in December, January, and February. But as we sit here today in May, we have over 4,000 vaccine-related deaths and over 10,000 hospitalizations. The limit to shut down a program is about 25 to 50 deaths. Swine flu, 1976, 25 deaths, they shut down the program. It's not safe. All the vaccines in the United States per year, what ambulatory gets reported in the database, is about 200. And we're talking about vaccinating probably 500 million injections. Here, in the United States, at 100 million people vaccinated, this is far and away the most lethal, toxic, biologic agent ever injected into a human body in American history. And it's going strong, with no mention of safety by our officials, with wild enthusiasm by our hospitals and hospital administrators, with doctors supporting it. Doctors are saying now they won't see patients in their waiting room without the vaccine. This problem, COVID-19, was actually from the very beginning. That's what Whitney Webb said. She goes, COVID-19 is actually about the vaccine. It's not about the virus. It's about the vaccine. I think it's about what the vaccine means. And Whitney Webb gets credit for this. Back in April, she said, aha, I figured this out. This is what globalists have been waiting for. They've been waiting for a way of marking people, that you get in a vaccine, you're marked in a database. And this can be used for trade, for commerce, for behavior modification, all different purposes. And you've seen it right here in Dallas. They've announced, you can't go to a Dallas Mavericks game unless you're vaccinated. You've had people say, listen, you have passports. You had colleges today announce that they're not going to give any credit to natural immunity. Every scientist in the world knows that the natural immunity is way better than the vaccine immunity. If it's about COVID, why don't we have COVID recovered go to the Mavericks games? Why don't we have COVID recovered people freely go to college? Well, why do we have to have faulty vaccine immunity be the priority and have natural immunity not count? See, these types of things make me think that Whitney Webb is correct. This is actually about marking. The vaccine is a way of marking people. It's a way of starting to assert efforts to create compliance, behavior control. Don't forget, the vaccine is just a starter. Now there's going to be updates. There's going to be boosters. They're already prepping people for this. There's going to be more. The vaccine manufacturers are all linked. They're all uniquely indemnified. What medical product is there indemnification where something happens to you, you don't have any recourse? You know, a woman gets vaccinated, a pregnant woman. She has no maternal fetal rights. Something happens to her or her baby. She's out of luck. This is extraordinary what Americans are doing. It's absolutely extraordinary what's being thrust upon us now. I think this whole pandemic from the beginning was about the vaccine. So I think all roads lead to the vaccine and what it means. There are already places in Southeast